3 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo show here, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, live from the Auction Community Studios. Typically, and I know we've been promoting it throughout the course of the day, it was something very last minute. Something came up, and we had to reschedule with Steve Keim, the general manager of the Cardinals, will not be joining us like he usually does on Fridays at 3 o'clock. I know today, above all others, we'd love to hear from him just hours after they acquire Zach Ertz in a trade with the Philadelphia Eagles.
I'm kind of bummed. I want to pick his brain on that, on that trade. Such a big trade by Keim.
But we got the call, and something came up. We had to reschedule, and so hopefully we get a chance to talk to him at some point early next week. So no Steve Keim. You'll just have to do with the two of us talking about the Zach Ertz trade, which came down this morning. And if you're just tuning in, I imagine by now you've heard the news. Zach Ertz is a member of the Cardinals, the tight end from the Philadelphia Eagles. He comes here in exchange for a future fifth-round pick, next year's fifth, and cornerback Tay Gowan, who is a sixth-round pick in the 2021 draft by the Cardinals. Ertz, and we had Bo Wolf on earlier. He covers the Eagles for The Athletic. He said it's unusual, and he's right. It is. You and I have been doing this a long time. It's unusual for a player who has been traded from an organization to have a farewell press conference with that organization. It doesn't.
It's unusual for a player that's going to get traded to play in a game when he knows he's going to get traded. That's even more unusual. But Harry Roseman said, you know what? We felt like we owed it to him. We wanted him to have this last game, home game, national TV. And I mean, they gave that to because, you know, the risk any type of injury and no trade. Trades off if he would have got hurt last night.
Zach Ertz met with the media today, as we mentioned, and he referenced last night calling it special.
Obviously, I'm emotional about it. I was crying in my locker last night for 30 minutes. I felt bad because the guys didn't really know, but I couldn't help it. It was special. You know, last January against the Washington, there were no fans, and so it was weird. And I'm glad I didn't end it like that last January. And it was special last night. Obviously, we didn't win, which sucked. But it was fun. It was fun to do what I do out there, and I felt like I played great.
He was named an honorary captain.
Yep.
Scored a touchdown.
Yep.
He was very emotional after he scored the touchdown. I saw some video of him walking into the locker room when the game was done, and you can just tell. Now that you know now what you didn't know then, looking at the video of him walking into the locker room, you can just see him looking around like, soak it up. Soak it up. Soak it in. Take a mental picture of this because this is it. This is the last time you're going to be doing this. And you can just see him kind of experiencing it like that.
He said, I was crying in my locker last night for 30 minutes. I felt bad because the guys didn't really know.
Yeah.
I was sitting there crying for 30 minutes. But you would know, right? I mean, do you remember Wilmer Flores crying for the Mets?
Sure.
On the field?
Because he thought he'd been traded.
Because he thought he'd been traded?
Yep.
When you think, you know. So Zach Ertz crying in his locker room after the game. He said, for 30 minutes, I just sat there and cried.
Yeah.
You don't want to leave. You know, you're part of that organization. You won a Super Bowl there. You've taken to the community. And so it was very difficult for him.
Said it's hard for him to leave Philadelphia. This is his home.
One of the things that kind of irked me the past couple of days is when this was coming about and people started to know about it, they're like, well, you know, you're going home. You're going back to California. Julie's home. And this is home. Philadelphia is home. And that was tough just to kind of articulate that to people that I love this place. I've said it all along. And it's a great opportunity to be here, and I loved it here.
Think about this all the time. You know, Luis Gonzalez, Randy Johnson, Shane Doan, a lot of these, you know, you could go live anywhere you want, man. You want to go live by an ocean, you can go live on the ocean. You want to go you can live anywhere you want.
Mm-hmm.
And you choose to live here. Why? The connection. It's the connection. It's my best years were here. I like that people can come up to me now. And Randy's okay with that now. He hated it as a player, but, you know. You're noticed, you're recognized, you're appreciated, you're respected. You can go somewhere else and you're not. You're not.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these guys, and you know, you're friends with many of them, so am I. You could live anywhere you want. You could go, you want to go live on the beach and look at the ocean, you can, and yet you live here in Paradise Valley or wherever you live. Why? Why? Because of the connection. It's so deep with the community, with the fans, with the organization that you don't want to leave. And I think Ertz, That's tough to leave because Philly is so much a part of who he is.
It's just the people. I mean, that's the toughest part, is leaving the people, leaving the fans. You know, I played with Jason Kelce for 9 years. So that's the toughest part.
It's fun. You get wrapped up. We've been in Phoenix. I've lived here my whole life. You've lived here for, what, 30 years, right? I mean, for a big chunk of your adult life. Okay.
25 years.
Okay, right. And so we get so wrapped up in our own little world here, our own little bubble, and we think about what a guy like Nash meant to us, what a guy like Fitz meant to us, what a guy like Gonzo meant to us, right? When you talk about the truly iconic sports athletes and how we connected with them as fans, living here in the bubble of Phoenix, Arizona, I had no idea that Zach Ertz meant that much to Philadelphia. Like, because I'm here. I don't live in Philadelphia. I don't really have any friends in Philly. I think I've been there once or twice in my entire life. I'm not that familiar with the inner workings of Philadelphia sports. I had no idea that Zach Ertz had that kind of emotional connection to that fan base the same way we did with a lot of those guys that we just mentioned, which is why he has a half-hour press conference today, when he doesn't have to at all. He's been traded. He has no obligations whatsoever to that organization or that fan base to do anything. But because he loves them so much, yeah, I'll do a half-hour Zoom call and bawl like a baby for a half hour because I love this place so much. I had no idea that's who he was.
Listen,
there.
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he goes back there. Look, Gonzo left. He played for what? The Marlins. He played for the Dodgers. And he came back here. Randy left. He came back. Doan never left. I mean, but I think, you know, maybe Ertz goes back to Philly. You know, but I'm always fascinated by that. You know, the guys that, man, you could go live on the beach, man, but you're here. Why? There's just an emotional connection to the people here in the organization, and you just don't want to leave that. Even when you're done playing, you don't want to leave it.
This has been a long time coming, and he was asked about the offseason contract talks and how he handled it. Zach Ertz has been rumored to be on the block, it seems like, forever, the last year or so.
I tried to articulate in the offseason how I felt about everything, and I'm not the one pulling the trades, and I'm employee number 86. I don't know. Hopefully it takes a little while for them to get another one in there, but I just do the best I can, and I don't know what happened. I don't regret anything about this offseason. I didn't say anything. I just tried to get healthy and be the best that I could, and I think playing last night, I think if you go back and watch everything, watch the game, not just the catches, but I think I showed exactly who I am as a player again last night. And so I'm excited. I don't regret anything that happened. I don't regret that it didn't happen before the season, because this is a much better way to go out than January 3rd of last year.
I respect him on the understanding. They traded me. I was a free agent. I'm not going to come back. They got another tight end that they like, and they got something for me, but they let me play my last game. And look, he will eventually go into the Eagles Hall of Fame.
Sure.
He will go into the Eagles Hall of Fame, and that will be, and they'll welcome him back with open arms. He was a very loved and valued player. But now, listen, he'll take a couple of days to get past that, and then it's all systems go with the Arizona Cardinals. He's coming to a 5-0 team. He's got a chance to win another Super Bowl. So eventually he'll, you know, his mind will shift gears into doing what he can to help the Arizona Cardinals.
It's a crazy, unique, weird situation he steps into to his wife, the soccer player Julie Ertz. She's a Mesa native. She went to Dobson High School. Julie Ertz and Kalia Watt, JJ's wife.
This is crazy. I did not know this.
Are teammates on the National Women's Soccer League Chicago Red Stars.
I did not even know that.
So you've got
an
Ertz and a Watt on one team and an Ertz and a Watt on the other team. It's a weird, unusual kind of conflux of circumstances, and away we go. Obviously, not playing this Sunday against the Browns, but as we said, Cliff Kingsbury, all systems go for him to be ready next Sunday against the Houston Texans. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo Show, we're going to switch gears away from the Cardinals because we got some stuff you got to hear. The deadline is now just a few days away, and one front office insider who is a frequent guest of this show is becoming very concerned. The Suns are on the verge of a major mistake when it comes to DeAndre Ayton and Mikal Bridges, and you're going to hear something you're going to want to hear next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Friday afternoon here on the Burns and Gambo Show, and on a day where the Cardinals 5-0, going to Cleveland, taking on the Browns, trade for Zach Ertz. It's got to be something pretty special for us to not talk about that and not talk about them and not talk about this game coming up on Sunday. I don't know if I would call this special, but it's certainly noteworthy what Bobby Marks, front office insider of ESPN, had to say about the Suns on an Instagram video he posted today. Oh, yeah. He tweeted out, why the Phoenix Suns are trending toward a grade of F this offseason.
Oh, what?
They still have...
They re-signed Chris Paul.
They still have 72 hours to fix that. And then he tweeted a link to his Instagram channel, I guess, or a video he had posted on Instagram.
He said they got 72 hours to fix it?
Yeah, here's
what this like a teacher coming to you when you screwed something up and look, I'll give you a chance to bring this in tomorrow and get a redo?
Sounds very similar to that, yeah. Okay. Here's Bobby Marks on his Instagram video.
If I was giving the Suns a grade on Tuesday morning, and if there's no deal done between Ayton, Bridges, we could put Landry Shamet in there too, the Suns get an F for this offseason.
Okay, hold on. There's more.
I don't want to hear that it's financial and Robert Sarver. Chris Paul saved you $30 million this year. $30 million by declining his option and signing that contract and by getting you tax distribution money of $13, $14 million. It ain't about the finances. You're going to be a luxury tax team next year, Phoenix, with DeAndre Ayton on a max contract or DeAndre Ayton at $26 million or Mikal Bridges at $23 million or Mikal Bridges at $20 million. You are going to be in the luxury tax, Robert Sarver, for the first time since 2009-10. Chris Paul and Campaign Gate basically gave you a get-out-of-jail-free card because 2 years from now, those contracts are not fully guaranteed. Devin Booker's still under contract. His big number doesn't start until, I think, 2024-25 for Booker. He's got 3 years left on his contract.
Wow. You want more? I got
more.
Wow.
Oof. That's taking a blowtorch.
Bobby Marks.
The Suns right there.
He's showing all Old Testament right now on the Phoenix Suns.
I don't want to hear that it's about finances. I don't want to hear that it's about we need another year of body of work. If the playoffs last year didn't show you what the value of these two players are, then you should go out and sell the team. You shouldn't be part of an ownership group here.
Wow. Strong words by Bobby Marks.
I have a lot of respect for Bobby. I really do. We've had Bobby on the show so many times I've lost track, right? And he's always been very generous with his time with us, and he's always had very nice things to say about the Suns. Remember last year, he was the only dude at ESPN
who picked him
to beat L.A. He was the only one who picked him to beat the Lakers.
Although, Kendrick Perkins was on the Suns being good early.
Okay, true.
Early.
I'll give you that. But to your metaphor that you used a minute ago, that's exactly what this is. It's a teacher you've handed in your term paper to, and he or she looked at it and said, is this your final work? You've got a few days before this is due. You better fix this, because if I have to grade this as it is, you're not going to be very happy. I'm going to give you this term paper back, and I'm going to give you 3 days to fix it, because this is not your best work right
here. Too bad that teacher in school that caught you for plagiarizing didn't give you that opportunity.
I know. You know what?
Mrs. whatever her name was.
Mrs. name will not be said on the radio show.
Awful teacher.
Mrs. Yeah. I saw you walk past us when we were at that Fry's 2 years ago.
We saw you.
I know you knew who I was, and you knew who I was.
Mrs.
We had a moment. Yeah,
Mrs.
we saw it.
So, worst teacher of all time.
You looked at me, and I looked at you, and we knew.
You could have said, plagiarized this. I'll give you a chance to redo it, bring it back tomorrow with something else. But no,
she
kept
him
out
that.
Of the damn National Honor Society.
She could have done that.
Yeah.
That's all she had to do, and I would have been, thank you very much, and I would have gone home, and I would have diligently worked to provide a paper that would have gotten me into the National Honor
Society. All right, so let's talk about this.
Okay,
let's talk about this. Boy, he brings up some good points. First of all, I think that DeAndre's worth a max contract, and I think Mikhail's worth between $20 and $22 million a year. Nothing's going to change my mind. But it's up to them to decide what they think the value of is worth. There is no risk in not signing DeAndre and Mikhail. Nobody could pay them more money, and nobody could give them more years. I'll continue to say this. The risk is on the players. The risk is not on the Suns. If the Suns want them to wait, I mean, then they want them to wait. Bobby's point is interesting because what he's saying is, look, Chris Paul gave you a deal. And now maybe the Suns are saying, well, we kind of wanted that money for other things. You know, we wanted that money to be able to do some other things with, not just re-sign our own guys. But he's saying, look, you got a break because Chris gave you, I think he said Chris gave you a deal and that allowed you to collect money from the league instead of paying money and stuff like that. It's a great point to argue if you're Bobby Marks. Like, they put you in a position to be able to pay these guys. Why are you not paying these guys? What do you need to know? Did you not see enough in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure that Robert has taken the lead of James Jones. I think and here's the thing. I truly believe this. I think if James went to Robert and said, I want to pay everything that James has done for the organization, if he said, I want to, because Robert knows, like, it kind of went south with Steve Kerr, you know, years ago, because Steve wanted to pay the assistants more money and they didn't want to. And so, you know, Steve ended up leaving over that because Steve wanted to give raises to people and they did it. But I think if James went to Robert and said, I want to give DeAndre a max and I want to give Mikal $22 million a year, this is what I want to do. I don't know that Robert would say no, because like you finally got a GM, you've got a GM you work with and that you trust and you value, and it's done an unbelievable job here. Are you not going to take his recommendation?
Right.
I don't believe that James made a recommendation to Robert and Robert said, no, I'm not going to do that. I don't believe that's true.
That is, I'm telling you, that is the question. I don't want to like over-dramatize it and say that's the question that's kept me up at night, but that is the question I've wondered about time and time again. Like, and I'm not trying to say this to defend blindly Robert Sarver. I swear I'm not, but I have wondered on many occasions, is this Robert or is this James advising Robert, no, I don't think we should give him a max contract.
It's the latter.
And if that's what it is, then this rant should be more directed towards James than it should be at Robert. But we're never going to know the distinction between that,
I think it's the organization. The organization looks at it and they say, okay, we value these players. We think that you're worth this much money. And this is what I think is happening, because I think that, you know, listen, James has an unbelievable rapport with the players. He's great with the players. Players love playing for Monty, love playing for James. Everything's really, it's kumbaya. I do think that they feel that they had a number that they feel DeAndre's worth, and they said, here's the number we feel you're worth. But if you feel you're worth a max, well, then come back and play. And, you know, if you play well, then we'll give you the max next year.
Here's something else, and I'm glad Bobby brought this up too. He pointed out this is not just DeAndre Ayton. This is a Mikal Bridges problem too.
Everyone can agree that he's not a max player. But when you have one of the top 3-and-D players, top wing defenders, top small forward who will be a free agent, restricted free agent next offseason, you go out and you get him done before he hits restricted free agency, because it's going to cost you basically 130% more than it would have cost you now. So if you think Mikal Bridges is a $20 million guy now, he's going to cost you $23 million, $24 million next year.
Mikal Bridges is
right.
He's right, isn't he?
He's right. He's 100% right. It's going to cost you more next year. These 3-and-D guys are just so valuable.
Yeah.
His value is only going to go up. He's a stock you kind of want to see if you could buy low. His value's only going to go. His value's not going to go down.
Mikal Bridges at practice today said, there's no secret I want to stay here. I'm waiting every day to find out what's going to happen.
You know, obviously, I want to be here. I love the city here. You can see it on my Twitter. I talk about it all the time. I might not like the Cardinals, but I love it here, man. But it's just great, man. It's just a great opportunity. I just think you control what you control at the end of the day. I mean, that's why I hire agents, and they're like my family, and I know we're going to do what's best for me, and I think and we all know we want to be here, so, you know, it's just time, and I sit there and just wait every day and keep improving. Don't let it, you know, get to me. Just got to wait. I try to prove as much as I can as time goes on, and, you know, that's pretty much it.
There's a craziness to it. I mean, we can sit here and go round and round and round and round about whether DeAndre Ayton is a max player, whether he isn't. Mikal Bridges, we're not having the max player debate about him. We're having a you've got to keep him debate. There should be nothing to debate about that. Mikal Bridges, you got to keep him. You got to keep him.
There's been plenty of players that the Suns have had. Dragan Bender, Josh Jackson, Marquise Chriss, that, you know, they weren't any good. They weren't worth paying. They weren't worth keeping. You didn't need them to prove anything. You didn't want to keep them. There were other players you're like, I don't really know what I have. I think it's fair to say, and we just talk about Mikal here. Forget about DeAndre for a second. I know exactly what they have in Mikal Bridges.
Amen.
I know exactly what I have. You want to debate DeAndre? That's fair. That's fair. Mikal Bridges, I know exactly. You don't got to prove another thing to me, Mikal. You're worth a certain amount. Maybe he's asking for more money than Like, you know, I'm pegging it between 20 and 22 million. Maybe he's saying he wants more than that. I don't know. I don't know how that's going. But that's a guy to me that does not have anything more to prove. That guy, I know exactly what he is. I know who he is. I know how much he gives. He's a leader. He's got high character. He's a great person. He's a great player. There's a value to him, and I think that that should be easy to figure out what that value is.
You just got an amen from the congregation on that one. When we come back, the move certainly caught the attention of football fans all around the NFL. What kind of message does the Zach Ertz trade send to the rest of the locker room and around the league? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Football Friday edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, but it goes beyond your garden variety Football Friday around here because the Arizona Cardinals acquired Zach Ertz, tight end from the Philadelphia Eagles, in a trade this morning. As the story goes, he was told about the deal on Tuesday. He knew full well last night was his last game ever as a member of the Philadelphia Eagles. He was named an honorary captain because of it. There was certainly was a risk involved by the Eagles in putting him on the field. If something disastrous has happened, obviously there wouldn't be a deal. Nothing did. He's a Cardinal. Can't play this weekend. He's not allowed to by the rules. But according to Cliff Kingsbury, he's ready to go.
Howie Roseman, the GM, said, I think someone asked me, what happens if something happens to him during the game? I said, that's a chance we're willing to take because it was special for him last night. It was special for him to come out on a nationally televised game in front of our fans as a captain, be introduced, and I get chills just thinking about it. They were willing to risk losing the trade because they felt so much respect for him that they wanted him to have that moment. Your last game in front of fans, home game, national TV, you're the honorary captain, go out there, flip the coin. You know, be a part of the coin flip. They were willing to risk an injury that would have blew up the trade.
Yeah, which
never happens.
Speaks to how much no, it doesn't. It doesn't ever happen, and it speaks to how much they respect him. Cliff Kingsbury today, what message is sent to your locker room by making this move?
I think it's great for our locker room to understand that we're going to do everything we can to try and win games, and this was a move we felt like with Max going down could help us and add to what we have going this season. And so I thought it was a great move by Michael and Steve to pull it off.
I spoke with, you know, some of the players, and the vibe is the same thing from what I'm getting. Yeah, this shows, you know, one guy told me that this shows that they are all in, that the organization is all in. This is a message, and you can't downplay this. The message from ownership and management, the message from Michael Bidwell and Steve Keim, and that they are all in, that winning is the most important thing. I mean, this means everything to these guys. That's what you want. Hey, Max Williams went down. Oh, that sucks. And hey, we got Zach Ertz. Okay, you know, great. Like, it just shows the commitment to winning. Look, Zach Ertz may only be here for the rest of, he may be here for 3 months and then go sign somewhere else as a free agent. Mm-hmm. But you're going for it because you had to go for it. You're 5-0. Everybody thinks you're a contender for a Super Bowl. You're definitely a very likely playoff team. Why not give yourself the best chance you have to compete and to win with this group that you have right now?
I think it's the most important thing to come out of today for the Cardinals. It wasn't from a football standpoint. It's not no disrespect to Zach Ertz. He's a very good football player, but it's not about necessarily his football skills. It's not necessarily about his skills as a pass catcher or as a blocker. It's not even, I don't even know if he's the perfect replacement for Max Williams in that, as we've talked about all week long, Max's strength was in the run blocking and pass blocking, and his pass catching was kind of a nice side gig to that. Well, it's kind of flipped now with Zach Ertz, right? His blocking is okay. His pass catching is what kind of makes him stand out. So even from a football standpoint, it's great. But that, to me, is not what this is all about. What this is about is exactly what you said. We're 5-0 for the first time since 1974. We just suffered a devastating loss. But if you think for a second that we're just going to sit around and do nothing about it, if you think for a second that we're going to sit around and, well, we've got guys or next man up, the cliche that everybody loves to throw around, when you're 5-0, it's the next man up mentality is a nice one to have, but it's not always the right thing to do. And for the Cardinals to not just rely on next man up and say, nah, screw that. We're gonna go give up a fifth round pick and we're gonna go get a guy. That message that it sends to that room, holy crap. They're not screwing around.
No.
You're giving up. I mean,
no, you don't wait. You didn't already wait. Yep.
You already don't have a fourth rounder next year. You don't have a fifth rounder next year now because of this. I mean, it's not hugely, hugely significant draft capital, but it is draft capital that you've just given up in the name of this. That, to me, is the most important thing to come out of today. X's, O's, great, but the message you're sending in the locker room, that's the loudest thing that happened today.
I agree. I mean, because that, you know, the player you brought in, this is, you know, look, you went out and you got a tight end on a practice squad the other day. That doesn't resonate with the players, right? You got a guy you signed to the practice. This resonates. This is getting talked about. Oh, my God. You know, this is the guys are calling each other. They're texting each other. This is a big deal. You got a premier player. He's a lot more than just a pass-catching tight end, okay? He's a lot more than just a receiver. He is an intangible guy. He brings a lot to the table. And, yes, he's not the blocker that Max Williams is, but he can block. He can block. He'll be fine. So he's decent at it. So it's not like they took, like, okay, Max is a tremendous blocker, and he's not going to block at that level, but he can block. So, and he's a great pass catcher, and you know what? He's motivated, and he wants to play well, and he's in a contract year, and that's going to motivate him. But no question about it. I agree with you 100%. The biggest message that's being sent is to every guy in that locker room, we are here to win this year.
Sam Macho on ESPN Radio this morning.
Kyler Murray didn't even need more reliable weapons, and he got some. I think Steve Keim should win GM of the year. Like, look at the moves that he's making. The great teams that want to win, they keep on getting better even when they're strong. We saw Kansas City do that a few years back. Last thing I'll say, after the game, we all saw that video of Zach Ertz getting emotional in the locker room. Nobody knew what happened. Well, now we know he's going to a contender. Congratulations, Zach Ertz. I'm proud of you. Happy for you.
Here's Ryan Clark this morning on ESPN Radio.
I mean, when you think about the Arizona Cardinals and the way that they've played already this season, the way the defense has progressed with the addition of J.J. Watt, and now you add Zach Ertz to an offense that truly doesn't even need him, but to a quarterback that's now learning to spread the ball around when DeAndre Hopkins is doubled, I mean, this team is going to be troubled throughout the season. The only thing to derail them is Cliff Kingsbury, and we'll see how he adjusts as the season goes along.
I disagree with one thing there.
The offense doesn't need him.
Yeah. I think they need him. I think they need a tight end in this offense. Because the one thing about the four wide receiver sets is, I know you're throwing the football. I know you're throwing it. You give me a tight end who can block and catch, and that kind of keeps the defenses honest. So to sit there and say, oh, they didn't even need him. You know what? Yeah, I think they did need him. I do. I think that they needed a quality tight end on this offense.
I agree with you.
It's not just a luxury. It's not.
No, it is, but it's also not the primary function. It's not the primary way they're going to move the ball or score the ball. You know, so to me, I'm kind of looking at an in between. I mean, I'm looking at it like an in between here. Max Williams was off to a good start for the Arizona Cardinals, but he was not the reason why this offense is as prolific as it is. He's part of the reason why, but he's not the reason why. And so for me, it's somewhere between what Ryan Clark said and what you just said is where I stand on the importance of the tight end in this offense. It's not completely unnecessary, but it's also not the main thing that makes this engine go, I don't think. I don't think Max Williams was the...
Okay, listen, you're entitled to your opinion. I value that.
You think Max Williams was the most... Like,
no, I don't. I think it's like you take an important part out of a car, it's not going to run as well. This offense is not going to run as well without a quality tight end that can block and catch the ball. It could still be efficient, but it's not going to be as good. This was one of the most dynamic offenses in the NFL going into the 49er game. They're scoring 30-something points a game. Look at the Jacksonville game, the pass from Kyler Murray to Max Williams. He caught 5 passes a game for 3 straight games. He had 15 catches in 3 games. Plus, he's such a big part of their running game with his blocking. I'm just saying, I don't think it's just a luxury signing.
I agree. I guess what we disagree on is just how big of a part he was in that car. You know, like how efficiently the car would have run without a tight end. You know, I think the car still would have run pretty good. I think it would have been not as good as it was before, but I still think it would have run
so
pretty well.
So for a fifth-round pick and Tay Gowan, why not make the car run as good as it can?
And,
right?
And that's where I'm at with
why
this.
Not make it run as good
why
as possible?
Why not make it run as good as possible? Because you're 5-0, and you've got a chance to do something that hadn't been done around here in a long time. I'm not knocking the deal. I just don't know if the tight end is as valuable in this offense as it's being made out to be. When we come back, ASU football, they've been able to run the ball almost at will so far this season. They're going to meet their match tomorrow night in Salt Lake City. That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
This will get that Peter Gabriel song out of my head. Little Rock the Casbah.
Absolutely. Cambo came in here before the show started. Had Peter Gabriel's Salisbury Hill going through his...
Couldn't get it out of my head.
And then he got it in my head.
I couldn't get Salisbury Hill out of my head.
Thank you, dear Lord, for...
I'm like, I just can't... All day long, that song has just been in my head.
I got the Clash's Rock the Casbah in my head. That feels...
Such a great, great song.
It's a great song. I had just gotten it out of my head. Now it's back in. All right. Well, now that we're done examining the contents of Gambo's head.
On my head. Peter Gabriel.
I want to stay out
Hill.
For a while, to be honest.
That's all that we found.
You ever play that in the band?
No, we've not played that one.
You never played that song in the band?
I will say the only Gabriel song that I know that was played, the U of A band did Sledgehammer. That's Gabriel.
That's
right?
My favorite Peter
Gabriel
song.
That's Bernsey's favorite.
Yeah, yeah.
In Your Eyes is pretty good too. But Salisbury Hill, great, great song. Song.
For like the half hour before the show, he was just humming it the whole time. And like, man, dang it, that's in my head too.
All day long, I couldn't get that song out of my freaking head.
Next break, come back with Rock the Casbah again so I can flush. There's nothing wrong with Salisbury Hill.
We'll just play Rock the Casbah every segment.
There's nothing wrong with Salisbury Hill. It's a perfectly good, it's a really good
Peter Gabriel
song.
It's
a really
good
song. It's just, it was in my head and I was looking forward to having it gone and now it's back. ASU football. All right, so all day today here on the Burns and Gambo show, it's been Zach Ertz, it's been the Colonels, it's been the Browns.
We got a big Devils game.
It's been Suns with what Bobby Marks said. We got a big Devils game coming up tomorrow night. Basically, control of the Pac-12 South for ASU is on the line. And while nothing is guaranteed, you will have a two-game lead over your two next closest competitors in the Pac-12 South if you win this game, because you'll have the head-to-head against UCLA, you'll have the head-to-head against Utah. They're the only other schools in the Pac-12 South who have at least one loss, will have at least one loss in that division. So it's huge for you to go up two games. For ASU, this does have a little House of Horrors kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
Given how things went down in 2019.
Well, that team was ranked 17th in the country, and the Utes were number 13, and Utah won the game 21-3. It was a terrible game by the Devils. They finished the season 4-5 in the Pac-12, but at the time, they were number 17. They went to Utah. They've lost 2 out of 3 in Salt Lake, so they haven't had a lot of success there. This is the toughest opponent they've got left, because after this, they got Washington State, USC, Washington, Oregon State. I know you're worried about that game in Corvallis, and I understand. I mean, I totally understand. And then Arizona, which hasn't won a game in over 2 years. So this game is probably the most difficult test left on the schedule for them. But they're rolling, man. Jaden Daniels has been one of the best in the country in ASU in total offense. The way they're playing, their running game is as good as anybody's. Maybe one of the best, you know, out there. Rashad White has been great. Trainum has been terrific. Hodges is playing well at tight end. Ricky Pearsall's coming on. LV Bunkley Shelton. So you're starting to see those weapons in the passing game. ASU's defense, tremendous, phenomenal. I love ASU this year. I think this is the year that they can win the Pac-12, definitely win the Pac-12 South. But a lot is on the line in this game because the Utes are thinking the same thing. Got to win this game and take, because they feel that they take control of the Pac-12 South if they win this game.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to play with a level of desperation. We talked about this earlier in the week. Utah's going to play with a level of desperation that ASU is going to have to match, because Utah knows exactly what's on the line, exactly what they'd be giving up in terms of territory if they lose this game to ASU, and how it would, not impossible for them to win the Pac-12 South, but very, very difficult. I look at Utah. The quarterback, Cam Rising, played really, really well last week.
He did.
Yeah. He relies on two tight ends. They're very tight end-centric when it comes to their passing game. Their rushing game is good, averages about 5.5 yards per carry. A Utah defense that has been really good at stopping teams from running the ball. They're holding opponents to about 3.5 yards per rushing attempt. I think the biggest thing that makes me nervous about this game, and I do think ASU is going to win, but I think the thing that concerns me the most, is that the last time ASU went on the road and played in a truly hostile environment, they collapsed. It was nothing but self-inflicted errors, and they didn't give themselves a chance to beat BYU. Don't give me UCLA. That's a very sanitized place to go play. It's not really loud. It's not really,
right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't have that same kind of passion or fervor
LA.
To it. It's LA, right? I mean, half the crowd's probably not there until the second quarter. this is Utah, man, and they're going to rock the house. They're going to rock the Casbah as the Clash thing.
Oh.
They're going to shake it.
I thought it was Cash Bar my whole life growing up.
You know, they're not
rock the
they're
cash
not rocking
bar.
The Cash Bar.
That bar had a lot of cash in it.
Yeah.
They rocked it.
Yeah, I I always thought. There's
never, my whole life, I never knew what a cash bar was.
You know, there's a bad moon on the rise. I always thought there's a bathroom on the right.
There's a bathroom on the right.
I always thought that song was "There's a Bathroom on the Right." If you listen to it, it's like he's saying "There's a no."
My eyes adored you, though I never laid a hand on you. I always thought it was "My eyes of Georgia." My eyes of Georgia.
We're all like,
I never like laid a
Crash
hand
Davis
on
and
you,
Bull Durham.
My eyes of Georgia.
I hate it when they get the words wrong.
My eyes of
I am worried about how ASU handles this because the last time they were presented with a similar task,
yeah.
They didn't handle it well at all.
Man,
they crumbled at BYU.
Everything's at stake here, man. They got the running game to do it. Listen, here's the thing. Utah's very simple. In the games that Utah's lost, they've allowed over 200 yards rushing. In the games they've won, they've allowed under 100 yards rushing. It's very simple. They know what they got to do. They stop the run, they win the game. They can't stop the run, they lose the game. Utah's only two losses to the top 25 teams, okay? One of them is including BYU, of course. So that's the one common opponent. The common opponent is BYU. Utah and ASU both played BYU. I think they're ready for this. I think they're up for the task. I think they're improved. We'll see. I want to get my hopes up. I'm sky high on ASU this year. I've been sky high on them. I understand it's a tough place to play. They've lost two out of three. The last time they went there, they laid an egg. This is a senior-laden team on defense. They got a dynamic offense that with a running attack that seems like that nobody can stop this rushing attack right now. Now you just got to put it together and not play stupid, right? You can't have the penalties and the false starts and put yourself in these holes.
It's funny. I was just thinking about it, too. That team that went up there 2 years ago, that was a really young football team, and they were just physically overwhelmed by Utah. Just pushed around at the point of attack to the point where 21-3, right? The final score in that game, right?
Yep.
They were, and all the coaches acknowledged they were completely out-physicaled in that game. I'm not worried about Utah, the team. I think the Devils are much better built to handle Utah.
You're worried about them beating themselves.
I'm worried about Arizona State beating themselves in an environment
that. It's fair.
I think the Utah team, ASU's built much better to handle the football team as opposed to 2 years ago when they just weren't ready for that. I think they're built much better now. It's that environment, and it's about the beating themselves thing. And if they can get over that, I feel very confident they will come back with a fairly comfortable win over Utah on Saturday night if they don't beat
themselves.
Then
you follow
that
up with Washington State, USC, Washington, Oregon State, and Arizona. But the reality is that you'd have to lose two of those games. You'd have to lose two in order to lose control of the Pac-12 South. You could lose the game in Corvallis. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
You could lose a game. You lose a game, no sweat off your back. You're fine. So I think that they're in, you know, you win this game and, man, I think they could punch their ticket to the Pac-12 championship game.
When we come back, after the Max Williams injury, we had an idea. Steve Keim might be sniffing around for a tight end trade. We'll give you our reaction to the one that came down this morning. Zach Ertz is now a member of the Cardinals. We'll talk about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.